Hi, today is February 27th, 2022. This is MobiViews Podcast 395. I'm Todd Agassi-Ward, my good friend John Westfall. Hi, John. I ran out of breath.
Hello. That's fine. That happens. But you're breathing again now, so that's good.
Yeah. Breathing is fundamental.
It is. There's a connection between breathing and life.
There you go. Okay. Now, first thing on our list for today is something that has been confusing me branding-wise. And there's sort of Google's official blog has something about new smart canvas features for Google Workspace. And the question is, what is Google Workspace? Because, you know, they got rid of the free one, I guess, kind of, sort of. And then normal stuff, like when I go to Gmail in a browser, well, I guess that's the only way you can go. When I go to Gmail in a browser, I type mail.google.com. It says Google Workspace, even though I've just got the, you know, plain old regular version of Gmail. Never did sign up for Google Workspace. So I'm not sure what Google Workspace is anymore. But I do know.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I don't know either. I think Google Apps basically transitioned into Workspace.
All of them, right?
I don't know what you call the consumer level anymore. I don't know if that's also Workspace or if that's just Google Apps still. Google is experiencing a very Microsoft-ish moment in terms of their naming at this point. And nobody is quite sure, probably even them, what these things all mean.
Okay. I almost just messed myself. I think I may have messed myself up, but that's okay. How do I get back here? Okay. So in a recent blog, like within last week, Google has a thing that says, hey, you know, we have five new Google Workspace features, and I think I see some of them in my, you know, regular old consumer Google Docs and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
So if you go and John and I use Google Docs for our show notes, like every week. So, you know, at least once a week we go into Google Docs, if not more often. And I guess I hadn't noticed, but I do see some new things, although I'm not sure I see the thing I was most interested in seeing. Which is how to the smart canvas thing, which is how to see the document in continuous scroll mode instead of page by page mode, which for show notes makes a lot more sense. And I don't see how you turn that on. And the Google blog article doesn't really show how to turn it on. It just says it's there. It says a pageless format in Docs. You can choose the new pageless format in Docs, and you can choose back too if you want to print it too, but I don't see where it is. So I go to View, and I can turn off Print Layout. Yeah, it's still in page mode, so I don't know what it is. It's just page layout versus not. It's confusing. Maybe under Mode. I'm just clicking through the very editing, suggesting viewing. No. Any rate, there's a couple of other new features that are kind of interesting. For example, it can write a summary of your document for you. Let's see. And there's a new sidebar. Oh, yeah, I do have it. There's a new sidebar that you can click into. It looks like a little tiny bullet point document in a sidebar. And if I say summary, I can do a plus, enter. Oh, no, it doesn't auto-generate it for me. So, well, never mind then. So I guess I don't have the new features. I don't know.
In general, this fragmentation culture that both Google and Microsoft are adopting when it comes to their platforms with business tenants versus their consumer tenants,
right.
You know, normal people who just sign up. It's very frustrating to me that, A, the consumer tenants get left behind on things that they might otherwise find useful.
Right.
And B, that there's never a good delineation of why one tenant type has it, the other tenant doesn't have it. It's just very frustrating, and I think in many cases overcomplicated than it needs to be.
Right. And so, any rate, so the five new things are auto-generated summaries in Google Docs, and I do have a summary thing in my sidebar, but I don't know how it works. Mm-hmm. And two, the thing I really want, the pageless format in Docs, so you can, you know, view our show notes, for example, without pagination, which would be nice. Three, you can pull, I'm just going to read this, expanded at menu. You can pull people, files, and meetings directly into your document using at mentions. I don't know. I guess I can try that. I know we can mention each other, so but I don't know about for meeting notes templates. I thought we always had that. Recently launched meeting notes templates automatically imports any relevant info. Oh, that's new. Okay. So the new meeting notes templates imports any relevant information from calendar, meeting invitation, including attendees and attached files. That's kind of cool. And five, you can now easily preview a Google Maps link directly in Docs. When you click on what they call a smart chip. You know, again, new terminology for things we're not sure if we have or not. But interesting. And you know, speaking of tenants, not only is there consumer versus commercial, there's also commercial versus government.
And education.
And education.
Oh, so, yeah. It's an overcomplication that I think really does not need to be there.
Right.
If you want to do a tier for nonprofit, that's fine. But in my mind, there should be three types of tenants, either a for-profit company, a nonprofit slash education slash government, or consumer.
Right. And sometimes even the same app behaves differently. So, for example, when John and I started using Teams to record the podcast, because I asked him to, really, because John doesn't care. but I felt that Teams
I'm
had
app agnostic on many things.
But so I asked John if he would be willing to try this, because I have a belief, and I think it's true, that the Teams audio has better quality than Microsoft Skype audio. And listening to a few things we've recorded in Skype, I can hear the difference. So I'm pretty sure that's true. But anyway, thank you, John. I don't think John is a regular Teams user. Thank you for, accommodating me on this one. Appreciate it. And speaking of Google, moving on. Speaking of Google, a week or two ago, we talked about Google Chrome OS Flex, which lets you install Chrome OS on any PC that's made in the last 10 or 12 years. I haven't tried it yet. Thought I would on President's Day, but I did not. But if you go to YouTube, there's a ex-Microsoft person, Kevin Stratvert, S-T-R-A-T-V-E-R-T. Kevin does excellent YouTube videos, mostly tutorials and how-tos. And when he was at Microsoft, when he was working for Microsoft and doing this on his own time, it was all Microsoft stuff. Having left Microsoft about, a year or two ago, I think, he branched out to other things. And so he recently put up a video, like in the last couple of days, I think, on how to install Chrome OS Flex, make an old PC new again. And it's a really good job, because I, of course, did not even bother to sign in. And it looks like you don't need to. It looks like all you need to do is go to the Chrome App Store and install a USB tool to install, operating system, or install Chrome OS to back it up, actually, as a recovery tool. So use this recovery tool to install Flex on a USB or SSD. Anyway, he goes through the whole process. It's a really well-done video, which is normal for him. All his videos are really well done. So I'm going to go review that. And I went through a bunch of it while I was doing other stuff, but I didn't pay close attention. But enough to say, yeah, that makes sense. Oh, I didn't know that. Okay, good, great. Thanks for telling me that. So I really appreciated that. Kevin Stratvert, excellent videos. Used to be all Microsoft. Now it's a mix of all kinds of stuff. So it's really kind of interesting. And the last of the things I wanted to bring up, and John has his own list, is I read in 9to5 Mac and a few other places that Apple has filed a patent for a magic keyboard, and that's their fancy dancy expensive keyboard that I can't afford, with an integrated Mac inside of it, so that you can, it's basically like my 1980 Radio Shack TRS. Model 1, TRS-80 Model 1, which is a keyboard and a computer built inside of it. You plugged it was a custom monitor, but, you plug a monitor into it, and there was no mouse, back then. So, and you're ready to go. So they have reinvented the TRS-80 Model 1, to my excitement, because I really like the TRS-80 Model 1. And I think, as other people might remember, people a little bit younger than me might remember the Commodore 64, the VIC-20, and in the last couple of years, the Raspberry Pi 400, which I also bought because I thought it was a great idea to have a computer and a keyboard. So I'm kind of looking forward to that. I was thinking about buying a Mac Mini at some point. Although I've got two MacBooks, so it's not a burning need. But it always seems like a good idea. It might be interesting to have a computer and a keyboard, especially since my MacBooks hardly move.
I think this is definitely the Mac Mini's next form factor. Because if I look at, you know, my setup right now, I have a USB-C hub that plugs into my 2020 MacBook Pro. Mm-hmm. And it powers, you know, it then drives the monitor that I'm looking at. It's got right. I've got a keyboard over here that's connected through USB and mouse, trackpad, all that. And this could easily, that USB-C cable that's plugging right into the MacBook right now could easily be plugging right into the keyboard.
Right.
And drive everything. And, you know, it would simplify my setup very slightly, but I could see it simplifying a lot of other people's setups. And the keyboard was always the thing that you knew you were going to need with a computer.
Yep.
You know, we haven't ever had a computer that can be run keyboardless, or at least easily keyboardless. We call those tablets. And so I like this idea as the future of the Mac Mini. And if you look at the price points, I don't think it would take too much to, you know, you can buy the regular Magic Keyboard or you can buy the Mac Mini Enhanced Magic Keyboard.
Right.
For probably a difference of under $200, I would think. Because they already charge a lot for the Magic Keyboard.
Yeah. Seriously.
And I'm looking at my very old Mac keyboard here that I bought in 2011. And I'm trying to see what this one is even called, if it's got a special name to it. But this was back when you just bought a keyboard and it was not in any way special from Apple.
Yeah.
And now I'm realizing it's very dirty and I should probably clean it at some point. But.
Well, you know, I bought, and I can't, I bought this like a, it's like a, almost like a Silly Putty thing, except much more much more liquidy than a Silly Putty, that you put on a keyboard and you just kind of let this goop, you know, drip, get down on it, and it picks up all the dust and stuff and doesn't leave any of it behind. There's no, yes, that guy. Exactly.
Yeah, I actually got some of this for Christmas and I have not used it yet.
Oh, it is awesome.
So I need to play with it, and maybe that'll be my goal sometime in the next few weeks, is clean this keyboard.
Yeah. Because that thing is not only awesome, it is fun to use.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, seriously. It's like being a
kid
again.
This is the Color Coral Universal Dust Cleaner.
Yeah.
And I had put it on my wish list many years ago because people kept talking about it, and I finally did get it this year for Christmas, so I really should use it. You know, it's only March almost, and yeah. I'll get around to it eventually.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, it's like New Year resolutions. It takes a while to get rolling on stuff.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Anyway, I even though it sounds very retro, you know, some ideas are good regardless of age, and I'm really looking forward to seeing this Magic Keyboard with an integrated Mac. I think it'll be a winner, especially in places like schools. You know, you one less physical item to inventory.
Very true.
Anyway, and hopefully it has a lock and, you know, Kensington lock and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's something that's been disappearing from Macs quite a
bit.
It's gone.
Recently.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so, it is gone.
So. I guess nobody really needs to secure things as much as we used to. Or
yeah.
At least Apple doesn't think so.
Yeah. Yeah, in fact, I remember when the iPad came out, I was kind of disappointed. It didn't have a Kensington lock to secure it when it was, you know, just sitting on my, you know, maybe not my home desk where it'd be perfectly safe, but... You know, if I leave it at work or something, you know, it'd be nice to secure it easily with a thin cable.
Well, you tell us that it'll be perfectly safe. We don't know. The bunny rabbits might come over and steal it for all we know.
They have tried.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you've got a couple of topics.
Yeah, I've been thinking a lot lately about the recording of thoughts and journaling and things like that through electronic versus analog versus skeuomorphic sorts of things. So for those that skeuomorphic is a weird term, that's basically the idea of creating a digital version of a non-digital item. So the old Apple interfaces for, the real old interfaces pre-iOS 7, I believe, for calendar and notes in iOS were skeuomorphic, where they actually looked like a paper planner or paper calendar. But it strikes me that in my daily life, I do a number of things that I like to record, and I like not only to do it in the most efficient way, but mm-hmm. also in a somewhat artistic or mm-hmm. more I guess, personal way. And I'm also one of the weirdos that when I think that, I don't ever choose analog. I don't have an actual paper notebook or a Moleskine. And Todd's showing me his. He does still have one over yep. there that he is using. So it got me thinking a little bit about a number of topics. I wanted to get your thoughts on them. And so I'll just kind of run down my list, and you can tell me what you do, and I'll tell okay. you what I do, and we'll see if there's cool ideas there. The first is daily things that you want to remember to do, habits that you want to form, or maybe you want to read a certain amount of, like Apple Books now has for reading. It will give you a 5 minute a day. Boy, your mic just got really hot.
Mine?
Yeah.
Interesting. Let me turn it off and on.
Todd is playing with his microphone. All right, I think it's coming back now.
Okay, like, I am back.
Okay, yeah. The background noise there was quite startling.
For oh, me. Interesting.
But anyway, so if you want to start a habit, trying to figure out a way to keep up with that, I've been using the Streaks app for a number of years
oh,
now.
Yeah.
I've talked about it before, where it's sort of my daily to-do list, although it doesn't produce a very nice... It does produce an output. I mean, it'll give me a CSV file of all the streaks I've ever created and all of that, but it doesn't give me a nice digital PDF view or, you know, complete a big circle or something like that. I thought about putting it over to Reminders because you can do a new list in Reminders that's got links to different things, those sorts of things, but right now I'm just on Streaks. I've thought about other ways. So how do you track things that you like to do each day or remember?
You know, that's an interesting question. So I have also been struggling with this problem, and at work I've been trying to use Microsoft Tasks. They may have changed the name again, or To-Do, you know, whatever it's called now. And I think they merged a couple of things. So I've tried that, except it doesn't remind me consistently. So limited. I'm not sure why it doesn't remind me consistently, because I set the reminder like, you know, one day before, you know, one of those kind of things. I've also used Google's task, which, again, I think its reminders are like, eh. Basically, I use Google Calendar if it's something I need to do, because I know that thing is rock solid in reminders.
Yeah.
But truly and honestly, and this is a little bit embarrassing to admit, if I really want to remind myself to do something, I will write it on a paper post-it note and stick it on my monitor where it is intrusive and annoying.
Yeah. Which, you know, and I think that's great with something that is urgent or something that is, you know, a one-time or even a daily thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I think if you're trying to create, it's all about trying to create a habit and trying to create, you know, identifying, hey, I really wish I would practice another language each day, or I really wish I would read a certain amount each day.
Yeah.
It's really interesting to think about how we start those resolutions and actually follow through with them. Because a lot of people, of course, at the beginning of the year, start a number of resolutions.
Sure.
And like I said, Streaks cracks me up in that it's great day to day, but if you actually want a record, you will get this giant CSV file of just, you know, you completed this streak on this day, which I guess is nice. I could analyze the average time that I complete things every day.
Right.
Which it actually does do. It will tell me if it knows that I do something before 8 a.m. and it reaches 8 a.m. and I haven't done it, I'll get a little pop-up going, hey, you remember to do this or that sort of thing. But it doesn't look all that pretty. Versus the next topic, which is, you know, reflection and journaling, actually creating something that, you know, you can enjoy looking back on later. I've talked about Day One, which is a journaling app that I've used. I also use NoteShelf, which is allows now digital PDF planners, and it's actually quite cool. You can tell NoteShelf that you want it to generate you a PDF planner for the next 12 months. And it will generate it for you and have day pages and weekly spreads and all these other things. Of course, that looks very pretty and it's very it's very kind of visceral in that you can draw and use, you know, cursive writing or whatever you want to do with your stylus. But yet it's not all that useful for reflection. You have to literally go back to that page. Whereas with day one, I can choose on this day and it will show me everything from the last number of years that I've used that app. I will note that I did find last year, about mid-year, a really cool way to make journaling at least more interactive, and that was what I call the Captain's Log shortcut. So it's a shortcut in Apple Shortcuts that when I tap on it, it just pops up a box and just says, what do you want to talk about? And I put in a sentence or two, three sentences, and then it creates, the first time you run it during the day, it creates an entry in day one and adds whatever you put in. It also puts in, I think, the weather and step count or some other thing. And then every other time you run it through the day, it just continually adds to that note. So at the end of the day, you have what I call the captain's log, because I'm a Star Trek fan.
Sure.
But you can see these time-stamped, you know, this is, and it also, I've added mine to give me the location. So where was I when I made this note? So that's kind of one way I've figured this out a little bit. But in terms of, you know, writing an entry or doing something, you know, reflecting on something, I haven't quite gotten to a point in day one where I feel that it's the right tool. Note Shelf might be the better tool for that.
Yeah, you know, that's an interesting thing. And, you know, as John mentioned, I held up a paper hardcover writing notebook, tablet, whatever you want to call it, with a little elastic thing to hold it together and a little bookmark. And so this is the way I use it. I have two of them, first of all. I have one in the office and one at home, so I don't have to carry anything. And also kind of separates my work life and everything else, although now that we're working at home, it doesn't separate as much. But and it is a mess. It is, in fact, it has things. John, you may be too young to have gone through the Franklin Planner craze.
I remember it well.
Okay, and in fact, it's funny. You know, we had a technology strategy workshop this past week, and the person leading it, who was a contractor and outsider, mentioned to me that in his youth, in his misspent youth, he was a Franklin Planner kind of, you know, they used to give classes on that. In fact, I remember my wife used to send her whole team to get Franklin Planner classes. And one of the things they teach you in that, I never went to the class, but one of the things I heard about was they teach you never to put a post-it note in your planner. And I'm not sure why that is, but I remember hearing that and thinking, no, that's not going to work for me. And I'm showing John, I don't know if John can see my planner, but my planner is nothing but post-it notes sticking out.
Uh-huh.
Some of it is just to tell me where something is as index tabs. Some of it actually has information on it, like, you know, do this. But I use the paper thing. I restarted using it just before the pandemic started, I think, when I changed jobs and I had so many more little details to deal with. I said, you know, popping up Evernote at the time or whatever I was using, Google Keep, was just not practical given the amount of inflow I was getting. And so what I ended up doing was I did two things. I have an app on my iOS device named, and I can't believe I don't remember it. Oh, called Notability, which is a great app, except they shifted their revenue model, and I'm not sure what I get now. Because I did a one-time payment, and now they have some kind of subscription thing, and I think I'm grandfathered out of it, but I'm not sure. Anyway, so I use Notability for my work stuff, but really, in both cases, if I do not have an iPad turned on or it's easily to get to and, you know, grab the file, I have these notebooks with a good old ink pen handy, and I will scribble down a note, which will then go into, you know, Google Keep or Notability or OneNote or something. As you can see, I don't have a single tool that I depend on. I also scribble little doodles, because I do still doodle when I'm thinking about stuff or just talking to people. No offense to them, and I keep reminding them that. So I am doodling because it helps me think, and that's true. And then that's where stuff goes. And, you know, I violate all kind of rules, but I still do like the idea, the discipline the Franklin Planner people used to instill in their classes, I guess, even though I was not an inherent adherent of that said discipline. But, you know, it's shocking and shameful that I depend so much on paper. On the other hand, you know, it's fun, and this is goes back to, you know, looking back. It's fun just to literally physically thumb through a physical paper notebook and just look at what, you know, and I put a date on everything. I learned that from one of the people I worked for years ago as a graduate assistant who told me, Todd, everything you write has to have a date associated with it. Mm-hmm. If nothing else, for you, so that you know when you wrote something down and why you remember why you wrote it down at that time. And so I've been doing that for many decades now. So thank you, Dr. Meredith, for that. And you know, it is really interesting to look back on things and look at the date and think, well, what was I doing? You know, when I did that little doodle, or I wrote a little cryptic little note. You know. And I try not to be cryptic in my notes, but sometimes that's just how notes are. And it's been kind of nice, you know. And even if the tools fail someday, or I'm gone and somebody just runs across my notes, you know, they can look at my doodles and look at my terrible handwriting, and you know, see what I was doing at that time. Since, as I said, I do date things.
Yeah, and I think that it's interesting. You talk about dating things and having the ability to go back, and that is, I think, what we don't often have. It sort of went away when we stopped being able to flip through things. You know, you can't really flip through an ebook.
Yes.
Same thing if you take all of your notes through an electronic book. I do have some old paper planners over here, and every so often I go grab them and flip through them just to see what was going on and what I was doing and all of that. And I don't ever do that with my OneNote notebooks or my note shelf notebooks. I probably should. It would probably give me some insight into the past. But flipping on a screen doesn't seem as visceral. And I think that's why companies like Day One will, you know, they have a printing service where they will print out your notebook if you want it. For me, I have so much other automated stuff that goes in there. Like I have the weather report every day go in and a few other things. I would have to go through and really curate what I would actually want printed in the physical paper book versus the external.
Yeah.
The next thing that I had, and it's really kind of inherent to when you're doing things, you know, if you do something with an app like Streaks or Reminders, you can have shortcuts to immediately go to something else on your device. If you're using a digital PDF planner of some sort, then you really can't, because it's not paper in a sense, or it's not electronic. It's supposed to be more of a paper look. I was interested, since you do quite a bit of doodling, that's another thing I thought about adding in, and I'm curious where you store those. Are they just on your camera roll? Do you just keep them in the drawing app? Do you think about how you want to store those?
Yeah.
You've got over, you know, almost 2,000, I would think, doodles by now.
Yep. I do indeed. Yep. And in fact, just to be accurate about these things, as of last night, I have 1,882 doodles. Daily doodle. Yeah, for a little over 5 years now. So to answer your question, you know, it's first of all, that became an issue a couple of months after I started doodling, and I thought I was only going to do a doodle a day for 100 days, and that would be it. But I found it so interesting, I kept doing it, and as I said, over five years later, I'm still doing a daily doodle. And so early on in the process, I would say maybe, so having started on January 1, 2017, somewhere on March or April, I said, I need to organize this because they're like scattered all over. So where were they? Originally, they were stored within the drawing app itself, and I was using mostly Procreate at the time. But then I started using, Taisui Sketches Pro, because when I went traveling, and I was still traveling a little bit back then, when I went traveling, I didn't want to take a full-size iPad Pro. I just wanted to take an iPad Mini, which did not support the Apple Pencil back then. And so I had to use a completely different tool to draw. And so I started using two tools, and it turned out Taisui Pro saves to iCloud, which Procreate does not. And so And so it got a little bit confusing. And so I created a Google Photos album. Every year I create a new album called, you know, Daily Doodles, you know, 2022 mm-hmm. or whatever. And I store my doodle there. But the apps themselves, it's a real hodgepodge. Some apps do store in Google Cloud, in Apple's iCloud. Some don't. And so, you know, you really do need to back them up if there's something you do want to go back in time and look at. And I do. I think it's a very interesting to do, to look at your doodles, because they tell you a lot more than, you know, little scribbles on a digital sheet. Yeah. They tell you about frame of mind, maybe something you were thinking about back then or something that happened, or just like, you know, your doodle technique as it changes over time, as does almost everything we do. My handwriting gets worse over time, but my doodles have actually improved a little. So that was nice to see.
Yeah. Very good. Very good. Well, you know, all of this kind of gets back to the point of how you basically use your devices to enrich your life in terms of tracking and understanding more. You know, I think I've talked in the past about how 300 years ago is when we first started caring about our sense of self. And that's when journaling and understanding who you are, forming your identity, really became a individual thing instead of, yeah. Prior to about the 1600s in Western culture, we were pretty much, you were defined by job and society, and you didn't sit around thinking about who am I and what do I, you know, how do I feel about this and all of that. And then right around 1700s, 1800s, with the advent of things like conduct books and other little guides that were meant
and literacy, to
someone form, yeah, literacy, and meant to, you know, form a relationship between yourself and a higher power and all that. That's when we first started having these psychological conversations of what am I, who am I, why does it matter? And so as we get into a world today where so many people say the technology is making us isolated from each other and isolated from ourselves, I think there's a lot of opportunity to add these things in. We just need to think about them, and maybe this podcast we'll get some people, you know, one of the fives of our listeners to think about.
That's right.
How do I journal? How do I keep track of these things?
By the way, speaking of reflecting, I mean, I don't think either of us use it for this purpose, but, you know, someday our podcasts, which are now many years old, will be a literal reflective recording of what was happening, what we're thinking, what we're using in terms of technology, at least. So, you know, who knows? Maybe there's, I know there are tools that let you, in fact, years and years ago, there were tools that would sample podcasts and let you search through them. I need to check if any of the tools we, you know, out there now are in the public cloud, are going through our podcasts and recording some of that stuff, you know, because I've got this linked over in Google Podcasts, and it's in audible.com. It's a free podcast, by the way, for people who use Audible. And of course, you know, it's in Apple's podcast list, iTunes or whatever they call it now. Yeah, that whole branding in Apple, it's really thrown me for a loop too. I remember when iTunes was just music, then it became, the iTunes app kind of became an app store, and then they split the app store from iTunes. But at any rate, very, very confusing. So, John, are you going to start doodling? Did you buy an Apple Pencil? I guess you've always had an Apple Pencil, so that's not a thing.
Yeah, I've thought about it. I just need to figure out exactly how I want to doodle, in a sense. I have a few apps that I've looked at that provide doodling through guided, you know, doodles, like draw here, draw there. But I have not yet done enough with that to really, I guess, make it worth my while, but it is something I've thought about doing.
I suggest starting your doodle the hard way, and doodle your cats.
That would be somewhat difficult. They don't always want to remain still long enough for me to.
But that's why you have a camera on your iPhone.
yeah, you're right. I will have to think about that.
But in all seriousness, you know, it is a lot of fun to doodle stuff that you know. And, you know, pets and kids and favorite things like flowers and trees and so forth, they're all good subjects because, you know, if you have a personal interest in one or all of those above. I've always wanted to, you know, I'm not an architect or anything, but I've also always found cityscape drawings interesting, but I'm just terrible at it because it requires so much detail that, you know, I kind of lose track of, I lose interest as I start doodling that. But any rate. Okay, so Mobile Use Podcast 395, we're a couple away from 400. And I keep saying bring more friends on, and I keep, the week just flies by and I forget to invite people, and I kind of hate to invite people the last minute and impose on them, but I will try to do something earlier this week, and then we'll try to get somebody on board for the next couple of podcasts as we go towards 400 and then hit 400 in a couple of weeks, probably in March. Yeah, looks like in March we'll hit number 400 sometime, or April. I got to count the Sundays. All right. Well, the world is a crazy place, and I hope those of you listening are in a less crazy place right now, or at least just for the moment. And we will talk to you next time when hopefully the world has settled down a little.